I'm Thomas Craig. I work with Wireless DK, and we do a lot of work with wireless technologies in the developing world. I'd like to start this by maybe... I'll spend about 10 minutes trying to bring this down to sort of current reality in the rest of the world. What's wireless being used for? So this is not about gigabit anymore, although I do love the idea of a holodeck. This is not about gigabit. This is more about the bus part, or maybe it's about kilobits if we're lucky. There was something Duane Hendricks said, which was about innovation occurring when it is driven by needs. And if you think about that statement, and if you think about the idea that we're all here because we're celebrating essentially freedom of thought, and that's about access to knowledge for everyone in the world. So let's take these two statements, the idea that innovation occurs when it's driven by needs and the idea of access for everyone. And I'll make another statement, which is that one of the effects of free change of ideas is that as technology becomes more democratic, innovation will come from increasingly unlikely places. There's some really cool things going on in parts of the world that we don't usually think about as being hubs of technology. And this is not necessarily just purely technological innovation. It's not about making the new wireless standard or pushing more bits through the network. It's as much innovation in terms of creative use of technology, taking what's being developed in the US and Europe and applying it differently. So I'll give a few examples of how wireless is being used around the world. And there's a couple of interesting projects. The JIPC, the JI Foundation, is a California-based foundation that works to... They basically work in Laos. And one of their projects is for a human-powered Wi-Fi computer. Human-powered meaning it's essentially a bicycle with a computer attached to it, which has a Wi-Fi link into the nearest town so that this village can be online. And I'm not presenting this as a particularly sustainable way of us getting access throughout the world, but as an innovative way to deal with the barriers of technology, which in this case is no access to power. Another example is there's a Cambridge, Massachusetts-based company called First Mile Solutions, who have a box that they attach to the back of a motorcycle. It's called the Motoman Project, and they use it in Cambodia to give offline internet access. So this motorcycle essentially becomes the network using Wi-Fi technology. There's a server on back of the motorcycle. As it passes into a village, it will sync the data with a local telecenter, and it will carry that data physically back to town where it will sync again with an internet-connected machine. This is only possible because of a creative use of Wi-Fi, so it can actually do this. This motorcycle goes through town anyway, and it can actually do this seamlessly because of the possibilities of Wi-Fi. In Indonesia, one of our colleagues, Dr. Ono Purbo, is heading up a project called the RebelNet, or the People's Network, which has managed in the last probably 10 years to connect 1,500 vocational schools through the use of wireless technology. And they've done this with pretty much no funding. So the scheme they use is that they use refurbished computers and really low-cost equipment, free software. They build boxes, or volunteers build boxes, and the schools essentially sell access for 50 cents a month per student. 50 cents a month per student is the cost of two lunch packs in Indonesia. So they've managed to convince the parents of a lot of students that it's worth their while to spend an extra 50 cents a month so that the school has a telecenter. Using Wi-Fi technology, they used to use amateur radio technology, but obviously there's some bandwidth limitations, and Wi-Fi, or unlicensed spectrum, has made it possible for them to do these things. It should probably be added that this wireless spectrum is not really unlicensed in Indonesia. It's just that there's really no legal precedence for what you can or cannot do with it. So they do it anyway, which is why they took the name the Rebel Network. And as Ono Purbo likes to say, it's not illegal, it's just not legal. And the last project example is SchoolNet Namibia, run by Joris Komen, who's actually here and speaking at a panel tomorrow at 1, I think, in this very room. They've taken a different approach. So they've actually gotten a license for 2.6 gigahertz, a licensed slice of spectrum, and they use telecom-grade equipment from Breezecom to deliver networks to schools around Namibia. And using refurbished computers, again, free software, wireless, they're also aiming at 1,500 schools around Namibia by 2005. And Namibia is a huge country. I was there recently. It is massive. And there's not that many. There's 1.8 million people living in an area, probably, I don't know, it's bigger than Germany, basically. And the schools are pretty spread out. And without wireless technology, there would be no way to deliver this internet connection to these schools. I think these things are pretty cool. They're pretty cool, innovative uses of wireless. And I think it's important that we think about that side of it as well. And the obvious claim is that none of these projects would happen if we didn't have open spectrum, if there wasn't a slice of spectrum where people were allowed to experiment, build equipment, adapt, use free software, test. And that goes even for the projects that are not actually in the unlicensed spectrum. So even the Namibian project would not exist if there was not free spectrum, if there wasn't a precedence for using this technology for this kind of application. There would be no way they would have convinced the government to give them a license. So the power to show that we can use this spectrum to have this third pillar, as Eben Moglen spoke about, to add it to free software and free hardware, to have this free exchange of thoughts is really good. Pretty cool and being applied in many different areas. So what are the reasons why wireless technology and open spectrum makes such a lot of sense in the developing world? There's a lot of these projects. I just named a few of them. And there's some very significant facts about the developing nations that make it a very clean fit, if you want to put it that way. Even things that aren't really that relevant in our own economies. There are some financial reasons why wireless networks and mesh networks make a lot of sense. If you have an interest rate in the 70% range, it's kind of difficult to go out and borrow $1 million to build a network infrastructure, dig down cables, and then start charging your clients, and then hope to ever pay back your loan, because by the time you've actually built the infrastructure, you're so hopelessly in debt that it's basically there's no future. One of the things that wireless can do is you can build it gradually. I spent 3 months volunteering with an ISP in Ghana, and essentially the way they were building a wireless network was going out, buying a few boxes, setting up two or three links, starting to charge their clients, so basically selling the boxes to the clients and collecting money for the first few months of connectivity. This money was enough that they could go out then and buy two or three more boxes and set up more links. This is a form of building networks that's fundamentally unthinkable in a wired network. It will only work in a network where there's open spectrum. I'm not just in a wireless network, but in an open spectrum network where you don't have fixed cost for running the actual network once you've set it up. That's a fundamental need for this sort of development to exist. And that's probably the main way that these networks are being built, step by step. Commercially or non-commercially. The other idea is this idea of distributed ownership, which is really central to a lot of wireless community networks, has a few advantages in terms it can help. I'm not saying it's a solution, but it can help dealing with monitoring and censorship issues. When the network is distributed, it's much, much harder to monitor, and it's much harder to close down. And it also gives this potential for rebel networks. The fact that this hardware is really cheaply available because it's consumer-grade hardware makes it possible for people like the Indonesian group to actually go out and do this, although it's not clearly legal, which would be unthinkable if it wasn't open spectrum. Then there's some practical advantages. One is this is consumer-grade technology. A Wi-Fi access point can be used by anyone. You don't need a technical education to actually figure out how to set up this access point. And in some African countries, you can still become a master of computer science without actually ever using a computer in class, because there are no computers. So technical skills are something that there isn't too much of in some of these places. The other practical advantages are also related to distributed ownership, which gives you distributed maintenance, which distributes the costs of maintaining the network to a lot of different single units. And because the client equipment is also part of the infrastructure, so it's the same essential box that gives me a connection in my office, but is also works as a repeater for the next people, I have a clear incentive to maintain that box. And those are some of the advantages. So there's also some problems. It's not all glory, glory, hallelujah, and we'll set up wireless and everyone will be online. There's a lot of issues, and they often relate to policy and unclear legal situations. In the Philippines, as an example, there's many countries like this. In the Philippines, they've just given away the unlicensed spectrum to the national telco after a lot of lobbying and pressure, because the telco has basically been saying, well, it will undermine our means of income. And this is happening in a lot of places. And I mean, the argument in these countries is much stronger than it is here. If a European monopoly telco said that, there might not be that much respect for that point of view. But in a lot of these countries, the telcos bring in a significant amount of foreign exchange because of the way the telephone system is structured, where when someone from the Philippines or someone from the UK, for example, calls the Philippines, the money is essentially split halfway between the UK telco and the Philippine telco. And that's significant income of foreign capital, which is important to countries in the developing world, much more important, much more so than the countries in the West. Then there's stories of abuse of judicial systems because of these unclear legal situations. If an incumbent telco sees someone build a wireless ISP using unlicensed spectrum, in some of these countries it's easy to abuse the judicial system. So even if there is no law against this, to take them to court and essentially have their equipment taken away from them and then to close them down for periods of time. And I've seen this happen in Ghana, I've seen it happen in Armenia, where the incumbent telco essentially goes out with a large lawyer force and essentially closes down an ISP for 3 months while the situation is being cleared up in court. And even if the local small ISP wins the court ruling, after 3 months with no service, there's not that many clients left. And the last thing is about lack of technical misunderstanding. So one of the problems that there are in deploying wireless in the developing world relates to this lack of technical knowledge. So what I've seen in a number of countries is essentially the model of, I'm going to set up this access point, and because I want to reach as far as possible, I'm going to boost power. I can do this because there's an unclear legal situation, and I can do this because the authority of the country has no means to control the power with which I'm sending. For open spectrum, for commons type spectrum, that's really destructive. If everyone bases their Wi-Fi on just turning up power until their client can actually get a link, this whole idea of a commons is not going to last very long. So there's some need for an upgrade of technical skills to show that there's a better way of doing it, that the way that we often do it here in Europe, by sharing the spectrum, by using mesh networks, by using directional antennas so we don't interfere, is a superior way, but it also requires greater technical knowledge. So those are some of the issues. I think it's important for us, at least it's important for me, to think about these innovations that are going on, these projects that use the technology, and to a certain degree follow the lead of community groups in the developed world by saying, okay, if you can do this there, we can do it. Sometimes they're way ahead of us, but sometimes they follow our lead. And as Dwayne Hendricks said, there's this need for a first flight. There's a need to show the world that this is possible, and that can have significant social impact beyond Europe and the US. And so I'd just end this by saying, fundamentally, these are not technology issues. They're either policy issues or they're social issues. And I think it's important that we just try and lift that burden as well. Thanks.